Imagine if today was the day your idea changed someone's life. Imagine if you could help someone pay for college, help your community build a new playground, or help a child make it to that dream competition. With GoFundMe, it's all possible. GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform trusted by over 190 million people. Every week, ordinary people meet their goals and do extraordinary things. Your ideas matter. GoFundMe isn't just for emergencies. Want to raise money for your kid's soccer team or raise funds for a small business, a creative project, or event? GoFundMe helps you turn ideas into reality. And help adds up. Fundraisers you start for someone else raise up to 5 times more. So think right now, who could use your help? Change rarely comes from waiting. It comes from someone deciding, today I'll start. Don't wait for someone else to bring change. Today, start your fundraiser in just minutes at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com to start your fundraiser. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
From smoke and carbon monoxide detectors to fire extinguishers and more, Hitta Home Safety products keep your family protected in case of emergencies. Did you know that your detectors need to be replaced every 5 to 10 years? Hitta detectors feature enhanced sensing technology that reduces false alarms and fast alerts for more time to get out safely. Visit us in-store or on Menards.com and shop our great selection of Hitta safety products.
Save big money at
Hey folks, it is episode 2 of The Bonfire with Mike Bond. We are back again, second week since the launch of the show. I want to thank everyone so much who listened, downloaded, or showed any degree of support toward the debut episode last week. Of course, this is something I've been trying to cook up for a while here. The timing never felt exactly right to do a show of my own, but we went for it. And of course, it's a little bit nerve-wracking to kind of put something out there like that and attach your name to it. But I think the reception and feedback was great. So anyone who showed me support directly by reaching out or otherwise, it means the world to me. And hopefully this is the start of something special. And I think we did have a strong first episode. I want to thank Rashad Evans for coming on and giving his light heavyweight champion rankings, which I think both of our lists probably evolved in the aftermath of UFC 307. And then to Kayla Harrison as well for coming on. And fighters now 1-0 who have appeared on the show. Kayla Harrison winning against Ketlin Vieira at UFC 307. Is this a kind of blessing in the worst? We're undefeated now. We'll see if we can go on a run here. Maybe the guests on the show will have a hint of luck from talking to me leading into their fights. We'll see what happens with that, if we're a blessing going forward. But speaking of UFC 307, that will, of course, be the cornerstone of today's show. Alex Pereira continues to be an absolute phenom in the sport after scoring a fourth-round TKO of Khalil Roundtree to defend his 205-pound title in Saturday's main event at Delta Center in Salt Lake City. What can you even say about Pereira at this point? He's just doing unprecedented stuff in so many ways. Just the seventh fighter in UFC history to get 3 title defenses in a calendar year. And then, of course, the stat brought up by myself last week leading into the event, him breaking Ronda Rousey's record for most title defenses, 3 in the shortest amount of time, 175 days. Ronda Rousey held that record prior at 189 days. Anthony Smith, the light heavyweight contender, former title challenger, will join me to discuss Pereira's win, whether he's the fighter of the year so far and maybe the fighter of the decade in the 2020s. I think maybe he's building a pretty good case as we get to the halfway point of the decade here. Maybe that's too much of a stretch. But we'll also talk about Juliana Pena's questionable decision title win over Raquel Pennington, Jose Aldo's questionable decision loss to Mario Bautista, and all the fallout around judging and refereeing that's come alongside this event. A lot of suspect split decisions on this card. And, you know, it just, I think, really put a microscope on what's going on the judging and refereeing side of the game right now. Dana White gave his comments at the post-fight press conference as well. We'll discuss all that. And then on the back end of the show, my good friend and fellow media member, Oscar Willis, joins me all the way from Spain on the ground for a different kind of fight week for him, his own. He is set to compete in bare-knuckle boxing. Yes, bare-knuckle boxing, my man Oscar Willis against Ben the Bane Davis, another media member or media personality in the sport. Those two are going to go at it. So we'll chat with Oscar all about that, a little UFC 307 talk as well. And we'll see how things are going for him. He went all the way from Salt Lake to Spain, the crazy bastard. So let's go to a quick break and then we'll be back with Anthony Smith. Joined now by the co-host of the Believe You Me podcast and the host of the Lionheart Lounge. It's the great Anthony Smith. Anthony, welcome to the bonfire for the first time, man. How are you?
Yeah, that's awesome, dude. I'm glad you got this. I'm glad you got this all fired up. I'm happy to be on here.
Yeah, no, it's been a long wait. I know there's a lot of podcasts out there, but you know, I've been doing this for a long time, so I thought it was finally time to kind of do something of my own, right?
Yeah, you might as well. You might as well. It's not like you're not already talking about it.
Yeah, exactly, man. So I know a lot has been said about Alex Pereira since UFC 307. You had some great reactions on your podcast with Bisbing kind of going over the event, but I wanted to have you on to try to get to the bottom of a key question here, and that's, did Alex just complete the best championship year in UFC history with his three title defenses, a record 175 days? There's only been seven fighters in UFC history who have got three title defenses in a calendar year. And just quickly, you know, I had you rank them and we're kind of going to compare lists here. We didn't reveal to each other coming in. Yeah. So I think it'll be a little bit of fun here, but I guess to set it up for the listeners, I'll just kind of share those seven fighters and the years they had, and then we can go into our rankings, Anthony. So bear with me for a second here. The first person to do it was Frank Shamrock in 1998. He won at UFC 16 with the slam KO against Igor Zanivov. UFC 17, he fought in May of that year, defeated Jeremy Horn by submission, and then fought in October against John Lober and got a TKO submission to punches. The next person was Tito Ortiz in 2001. UFC 30 in February, beat Evan Tanner by slam KO. UFC 32 in June, defeated Elvis Sinisic by TKO. UFC 33 in September, defeated Vladimir Matyushenko by decision. The following year in 2002, Matt Hughes won at UFC 36 against Hayato Sakurai by TKO. UFC 38 in July defeated Carlos Newton by TKO. UFC 40 in November defeated Gil Castillo by TKO. 2006, Chuck Liddell, UFC 57 defeated Randy Couture in that historic bout by KO. Fought in August against Bobolu Sobral at UFC 62, won by TKO, and then fought Tito Ortiz at UFC 66 in December, also won by TKO. We didn't get another year like that until 2013 with Demetrius Johnson. UFC on Fox 6 in January defeats John Dodson by decision. UFC on Fox 8 in July defeats John Moraga by submission, armbar. And then UFC on Fox 9 in December defeats Joseph Benavidez with that epic knockout win. And then it took another 8 years for it to happen again. 2021, Kamaru Usman, UFC 258, February defeats Gilbert Burns by TKO. UFC 261, April, knocks out Jorge Masvidal. And then UFC 268 in November defeats Colby Covington in their rematch by decision. And then that brings us, Anthony, to 2024. Alex Pereira, UFC 300 in April, knocks out Jamal Hill. UFC 303 in July, Yuri Prohazka, TKO, head kick and punches. And then as we saw this past weekend at UFC 307, defeats Khalil Roundtree by TKO. So some legendary runs there, Anthony. I guess let's go to you first. Who did you have at the bottom of your list? So number seven among that.
Oh, we're going from the bottom.
Yeah, let's go from the bottom and try to count our way up and see if we agree on number one here.
I'm going to go Tito Ortiz's run in 2001. Not that it wasn't a great run, but I think if you look at where we were in that time of MMA, guys like Tito Ortiz who had a pretty good wrestling background or were even remotely a little bit athletic and knew any kind of little bit of a combat sport other than like, or new combat sports, you know, have a little bit of wrestling, a little bit of boxing, you could kind of dominate there. Mm-hmm. I don't want to hate on Tito. It's a great run. Three title fights in the same year is incredible. But I think at the time, the point in time that the sport was and where he was is in terms of his athletic ability, he was just physically superior to all those guys anyways.
Yeah, I think that's a good analysis. I had Frank Shamrock at number seven for kind of similar reasons there. I mean, obviously, it goes way back there. I think at the time, the light heavyweight division was 198 pounds when he did that. Mm-hmm. So it was like kind of pre-unified rules as well. And yeah, I mean, you know, a slam KO is great, a heel hook, submission to punches, but you kind of maybe got to look at the quality of competition there too. Jeremy Horn is, I think, the biggest win of that group for Frank Shamrock in 98. So that's why I had him at seven.
Yeah, and well, and I and you know, if we just want to move right along, yeah. I had Frank Shamrock at six for the same reason. Two of those guys on that list, the other two guys other than Jeremy Horn, nobody other than you and me know who those two guys are. There's probably no one watching this that's ever heard those two names. And that's okay. That the sport had to start somewhere. I'm not saying it's not great. Mm-hmm. It's just at the bottom of this list.
Yeah, and I had Tito at six, so we're pretty close there.
We just pretty close.
Yeah, similar reasons there. I mean, the two finishes, the one decision. I mean, the Evan Tanner knockout slam is kind of a legendary highlight there. Elvis Sinisik, I think, was like 1-7 in the UFC in his career or something.
Right.
So, again, a competition thing. So, yeah, I can kind of blow through the bottom of the list there. I think we largely agree with those, obviously, historic accomplishments. But if we're ranking levels of greatness here.
I think we're going to get a little bit dirty here after this one, I would imagine.
Okay. Number five, do you want to go first or shall I?
I'll let you go first.
Okay. So my number five, I had Demetrius Johnson in 2013.
Oh, this is crazy.
Yeah. So I had Demetrius. I mean, obviously, a great year. Joseph Benavidez, I believe he was the first to knock him out. The Moraga armbar was slick. Dodson, that rematch was fun, but yeah, again, just those guys are all great, but I rated some of the competition elsewhere on the list for some of these other fighters just a little higher. Flyweight was very early in its inception during that 2013 year. So who do you have at number five?
I had Kamaru Usman.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, I had Kamaru Usman. Wow. Again, I'm probably going to preface this with every single one of these guys. It's an amazing accomplishment. So obviously it's only happened to seven people have done it in the history of our sport. I mean, it's amazing, but the Gilbert Burns fight, I hold it a little bit differently. I think a win over Gilbert Burns means a lot. I think that it hasn't aged as well as maybe other wins the guys have gotten just because Gilbert has struggled a little bit. And Father Time gets us all. And he's an aging fighter with a lot of miles and in a pretty intense style. I also think that there is something to those guys being training partners in the past. I think there's a big brother, you know, situation working there a little bit. I think that fight would have been closer had they not known each other. So I think that all things weren't created equal in that fight. Masvidal, love Masvidal, but that's a mismatch any way you can cut it. It's just a mismatch. Masvidal's not a wrestler. Kamaru Usman's never going to stand and strike with Masvidal. I think the wrestling opened up the knockout for, like, the threat of the wrestling opened up the knockout. Masvidal historically struggled with wrestlers, and that's just how that one went. And then Colby Covington, it was a great fight, but it was essentially two wrestlers striking. I wouldn't necessarily say it was super high level striking at that. It was a crazy fight because they didn't like each other. There was a lot of beef. I was there in the building. It was insane. But again, Colby Covington has found himself in some positions that I think he talked himself into, maybe not always situations that he earned.
Yeah, interesting. I definitely had Usman higher. I'll reveal him in a bit, but I think you make some good points there. I mean, I kind of rate Gilbert maybe a little higher coming into that fight with what he was doing. He was looking pretty scary in some of those matchups, you know, and stuff. So you kind of try to rate it for at the time of where guys were out. I mean, I don't think anyone was expecting him to KO Masvidal like that, no matter of the circumstances.
And for sure.
You know, the Colby fight was tooth and nail. It was, I think, one of the better fights of that year as well. So I'll reveal where I have him on my list, but that's fascinating that you had him as low as you did. So on to number four. Who did you have there?
Number four, I had, my phone's all messing up here. Four, I had Chuck Liddell. I think that his anti-wrestling at the time was kind of for as high level of a wrestler as he was. I thought that his kind of anti-wrestling and using it against people, I thought was pretty goddamn good, especially with he was a great wrestler turned into a striker. Randy Couture was absolutely one of the highest level wrestlers that we've ever seen. I thought the knockout was dope. Chuckle was like an icon at the time, the Mohawk, the head tattoo. He revolutionized the sport, but, Bob Lou fight was great. And Tito, I have the Tito fight very similar to Kamaru Usman versus Gilbert Burns, though. Like, I think that fight is closer had those guys not had such a history and such a background and trained with each other and had that kind of weird for anyone. Was it 30 for 30 they did on Tito and checker.
So, yeah.
Like if you haven't watched whatever that was, I think that's a great insight into the relationship. And I think it really shows that there's a mentality to this sport that can really change the outcome of a lot of these fights.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'll give my thoughts on that shortly because he's around the corner for me. But for number four on my list, I had Matt Hughes in 2002.
See, we're not that far off. See,
yeah, no, it's close, but it's kind of opinion based, but that's what makes it fun here. I had Matt. I thought, you know, obviously Hayato Sakurai. I didn't do a ton in the UFC, but a legendary name in Japan. I think that's a quality win. Carlos Newton, Gil Castillo. I mean, Matt Hughes was just on top of the world there. He was running through everyone. All TKO finishes. So yeah, I just thought that was a quality year, but not enough to break into my top three. So yeah, that was a close one. And I guess to go into my top three, I had Chuck Liddell at three there with his 2006 run. I mean, the Randy Couture fight, UFC 57, that was the first pay-per-view I ever ordered, like with my boys
in
school, like having people over. I think I was in eighth grade or something. And that one just stands so clearly in my mind to what like really kicked off this passion. And obviously that was a huge fight for the sport at the time. Randy, two division champion, what he had done. So that was a big win for Chuck. The Bobaloo fight, I think maybe the least quality of those three in that year.
Yeah, probably.
And yeah, that was at a time when UFC kind of, they wanted him to get revenge for that rematch or, you know, do all that stuff and kind of brought him into a title shot when maybe he didn't have the greatest run to earn it. But yeah, still an awesome run. I mean, 2006 was, I think, a big breakthrough year for the UFC, and Chuck and Couture and Chuck and Tito were huge parts of that year. So I liked him at number three there, but not far off from where you had him.
Yeah, and my three is Matt Hughes for a lot of the same reasons. I think that as the sport was evolving, Matt Hughes was one of those guys that almost went the opposite way. Like it was very, very one-dimensional for most guys at the beginning. And then as the sport got better, we got better athletes and people evolved. You got guys like Chuck who were college wrestlers that came in as strikers. You had guys like Randy Couture and Tito who were great wrestlers and turned into strikers, and everyone was starting to learn everything. And Matt Hughes was almost the opposite. He came in as a wrestler and he stayed that way for a very long time. If Matt Hughes was stuck out on his feet, it was typically not great for Matt Hughes. So I thought that he did a lot with not a lot for that time in the sport. I thought he was more one-dimensional than anyone at the top had been and was super successful there.
Yeah, great points for sure. Kind of the opposites there, right? Like Chuck was the sprawl and brawl guy, and that was
what
he needed to get you down.
So. Yeah, he was just shoving a square peg through a round hole and making it work. Yeah,
they're different sides of finding success. Okay, so my number two, I had him obviously much higher on my list than you did yours. I had Kamaru Usman there at two. I just rated that year highly. I mean, I think that's what kind of gave him legendary status, was that 2021 run where he was very active, you know, all the COVID stuff, had the title fight in the Apex against Gilbert, and obviously a lot of emotion there, and he proved to us all how dangerous that jab he was in that fight.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, turned around pretty quick and headlined that first arena show back from COVID, right, against Gilbert, or against Jorge, and
I was on that card.
Yeah, exactly, right.
Yeah, I fought Jimmy Crute.
Yep. So yeah, that was just a huge knockout. I think so unexpected, you know, the sweat flying from Masvidal's head.
Yeah, what an iconic picture though too.
Yeah,
just Masvidal turned all the way around backwards. It was a great fight.
Yeah. So,
go ahead.
Again, to just kind of further explain. I mean, I rated him that high too. Just the competition, right? Like these guys, obviously in the modern era, are much better than the early 2000s and things like that. So I kind of, you know, take that into account pretty heavily. So yeah, you're number two. I think I know who it is, but maybe you'll surprise me. Let's see.
It's Alex Pereira.
Okay. Wow. All
yeah. Right. It's Alex Pereira. He's number two. And I suppose I can go ahead and get into my number one at the same time, because that only leaves Demetrius Johnson as number one. Those two, I kind of bounced back and forth with like who had the better run. And it came down to kind of diversity of those fights and those opponents in terms of what they look like. Alex Pereira fought Jamal Hill, Yuri Prochazka, Khalil Roundtree, all of them 100% strikers for the most part. Yuri will wrestle a little bit here and there if he has to, but for the most part, he wants to wrestle. I hold a Yuri Prochazka win really, really highly. And he doesn't win them all. We've seen Yuri, he's been beaten outside the organization. He's been beaten in the organization. We've seen Glover Teixeira kind of walk all over him at times. In that fight, but he is such a hard guy to beat. I mean, yesterday on, you know, with Michael, I'm having this conversation saying, I don't hold the Rakic, the Rakic loss to Jiří. Mm-hmm. That it's, I don't think it's that big of a deal. I think if Rakic beats Magomed Ankalaev, he's sliding right into a title fight because Jiří is his own thing. Mm-hmm. He's his own thing. Like, you guys might fight 10 times. And if you fight Jiří Prochazka 10 times twice, the first time might go 5-5, and the second time he might beat you all 10. Like, there's no, he's so hard to fight. He's so hard to fight. He's so unpredictable. He's so hard to train for. He doesn't know what he's going to do. There's no, he's like a Johnny Walker. He's an anomaly. Like, you probably should beat him, but you might not. Like, it's just how he is. So I hold that one really high, and he did it twice. So I think that that's a big deal. Khalil Rountree is a goddamn monster. And to fight Khalil on Khalil's terms, even though you're a striker yourself, like, we all know that Khalil's not a great grappler. So for those two guys to kind of go in it the way that they did was a big deal to me. I think the way that he's finishing people is different. Jamal's never even rocked before. And for him to do him the way that he did is really impressive to me. Maybe I'm a little bit closer to this because it's my weight class. So I know how hard some of these guys are to beat. So maybe I'm a little bit biased there. But also the way that he is kind of conducted his career with those last three fights. I mean, the dates are super close together. I mean, they're quick turnarounds. He's been injured. He's had foot and toe injuries and been able to be successful. He was really sick in his last fight, which I knew and didn't say anything publicly, but knew he was really, really sick and having a tough time with the altitude. And short notice, Jiří Prochazka, short notice, Jamal Hill, fairly short notice. And this Khalil Rountree fight, he's not like he had 15 weeks to get ready for it. I mean, it was fairly quick. From the time they announced it, he didn't know long before that. So we're talking 6-week training camps. And I know for a fact when he fought Jiří Prochazka, he was in Australia doing like a media tour. He wasn't even in America training. So, and he turned around and fought pretty quick. So I think that just the circumstances behind some of those situations and fights get him to number two for me. Demetrius Johnson, I think that if you just look at the guys that he fought, John Dodson, who's still being, this fight was in 2013. John Dodson is still being successful in mainstream shows today. He's still champions of other organizations today. Yeah, I mean, he's still absolutely killing it. And at the time, John Dodson was young. He was fast. He was an insane scrambler. The way that he fought was different. I don't think that Demetrius Johnson had ever seen anybody like that. So for him to get John Dodson like that and get a win was a big deal. John Moraga, back, that guy was a goddamn monster. He was in the way that he finished John Moraga, that armbar was absolutely nasty. And it was revolutionary in terms of just the way that Demetrius moved and attacked things. And I hold Joseph Benavidez really high. Like, you know, the NBA and the NFL, they always do these like 75 best players or whatever it is. Like, whatever that list is, I don't really care how long it is. Joseph Benavidez is on every single one of mine. I think he's just really high level. And if he existed in a world where Demetrius Johnson didn't, that guy would have been champion and would have been for a very, very long time. And he finished him, which is even more impressive. And I think that across the board, Demetrius Johnson was the most skilled, technical, and diverse fighter that we've ever seen, even to this day.
Yeah, that's a great case. I mean, I think you laid it out well, the decision, the submission, and the knockout that year. And yeah, he was obviously levels ahead of the game. And yeah, I think if you're talking about like the most well-rounded, how dominant he was, all those things, he's definitely got a good case. Maybe I had him a little too low at five, but I'm also still pretty comfortable with it. Obviously, I had...
After you had your spiel, I was like, man, maybe I should have went a little bit higher with Usman.
No, I mean, hey, we probably have it, you know, on both sides of what we maybe should have done a little higher here or there. But yeah, I had... Of course, Alex at number one there. I think he pretty much made the case of why he should be very high, at worst too. I think the history of the turnarounds, all three knockouts, you can say things about, I guess, the competition, but I agree with what you said about pretty much all those guys, especially Jiří. And yeah, the fact that he did it under extremely unideal circumstances seemingly every time, I think adds a lot of bonus points.
I think that's a lot of it. Yeah, that's a lot. I mean, if we'd stretched this out over a longer period of time and he'd had a whole bunch of time to prepare for it. And, you know, maybe he's the co-main on a couple of these with like a Connor at the main event. Maybe he's not at the top of the list, but excuse me, they were absolutely less than ideal circumstances, and he just rolls with the punches and adapts, and that's hard to do at this level.
Yeah, for sure. So that kind of rolls me into the next thought. I mean, you don't have him as, you know, your number one single fight year. I think there's a great case to be made that you laid out there, but I think it still goes into like the core question of where his year lies. And I don't know, I think a debate coming out of this is he already the fighter of the year, Alex Pereira, for 2024, given what he's done? Or the one thing I keep seeing people throw out there is the winner of Max Holloway and Ilia Topuria. No matter which way it goes, might have a stronger case. Obviously, Max would be the crazy UFC 300 finish. And then this title win, and Ilya would be, you know, knocking out Volk and then beating Max however he does. Would those top three title defenses in a year for you, or do you think Alex has this locked up already?
It's pretty close. Unless in the Topuria Holloway fight, there's something insane that happens in terms of a finish, or just it's some wildly nuts fight where there's a guy that's that faces some real serious adversity and then has to battle back and gets a win. It's in October. I mean, that's about the only fight that can do it, that could really stand out. Max Holloway knocking out Justin Gaethje the way he did at the end of that fight, and then maybe knocking out Topuria, that might top it. Topuria knocking out Max Holloway would probably top that too. You beat Volkanovski and Max Holloway in the same year. It'd be hard to argue that as great as Alex's run has been, it's not the two best featherweights of all time. You know what I mean? Like the only thing that would make it any better than that is if he beat Jose Aldo in the same year, you know, like if you beat Jose, Max, and, you know, and Volk in the same at all, that'd be crazy. But yeah, I think he's definitely in the running, and I think that the only thing that really is kind of hanging over his head to go ahead and just give him his trophy now is that fight.
Yeah, and I guess to go back to the core point too, it was like, you know, I think Ilya, if he beats Volk and Max, that's a great year to, you know, become champion and then defend the title. Kind of what we're talking about for the conversation is like, when you're champion, what kind of year have you had? And right. Some people might hear our list and be like, well, there's someone that had two title defenses that were better than this person's three. So I'm just going
to...
I'm just going to name a few here that I kind of pulled out that I thought would maybe be candidates. And I guess you say if you think any of these are better than what we listed. So BJ Penn in 2009 beat Kenny Florian and Diego Sanchez. That was a great year. Anderson Silva in 2011 beat Vitor Belfort and Yushin Okami. Ronda Rousey in 2014 finished Sarah McMahon and Alexis Davis in like 40 seconds combined. Alexander Volkanovski in 2022 beat Korean Zombie and then Max Holloway for the third time. And then Islam Makhachev in 2023 beat Volkanovski twice. Do any of those feel like they one up anything on our list? I don't really feel like so.
No. The only one that gets close is maybe Volkanovski. And that's only because it's pert near impossible to beat the same person at a high level three times.
Yeah.
It's hard. I mean, just if we even just use myself as an example, I absolutely smoked Ryan Spann the first fight and then fought him to a split decision in the second. Like once you feel somebody for the first time, then you can prepare differently. And then you feel them for another 25 minutes and then you go again. Like to beat someone like Max Holloway repeatedly over and over and over is, I don't think he gets enough credit for that. A guy that's as high level as Max Holloway and the fight IQ that he has, the team that he has behind him, the preparation that he does. Like, I mean, just look at the difference he made from his previous fight with Korean Zombie to moving into the Justin Gaethje fight. The preparation that took to be as disciplined to just walk yourself in every scenario with that guy and come out of it clean it's just insane. So to beat that guy three times with him having two previous encounters that he can really build off of, that's really hard. So looking at it as a snapshot, like, yeah, that's cool. But like digging deep into it as an athlete myself, that's damn near impossible. So that's close, but I don't think so.
Yeah, I agree. Solid years all around, but I would
I would be happy to be any one of these people we've talked about. So I can't talk too much trash.
And I guess, yeah, of course, we're you know, disseminating levels of greatness here. What all these people right. do is fantastic. So like, there's no negative slant to any of this stuff. It's just trying to dig to the bottom of it. I guess last thing on here, and I haven't really heard anyone mention this, and I know it's probably a way, way too early discussion, but say Alex does get Fighter of the Year this year. He got it in 2022. He was a candidate in 2023. At the end of this year, Anthony, it's going to be halfway through the decade, through the 2020s, right? And at the end of the 2020s, we're going to be talking about fighters of the decade. And we did that at MMA Junkie, like a list of our top 10. It's some of the greatest names you'll ever see. Do you think Alex is probably the front runner for like to be fighter of the decade as we get there? Because I think about over the next 5 years, who could even surpass him? The only two names who really came to mind were, again, Ilya Topuria and Max Holloway, who are like young enough to still do something over these next few years. But
Max might be on the list for the previous decade.
Yeah.
You know, like
I think we had him at number 10 and everyone else is like either retired or out of the UFC.
Right. Which is so crazy that he's still so young.
Yeah.
Or at least he was so young. It was definitely crazy. He was as great as he was, as young as he was. I feel like he's finally like middle aged now, but someone would have to start right now. Mm-hmm. Like it would have to be a debut guy right now. And he'd have to be the champion before the end of this decade. Yeah. And that's really hard to do, bro. It's not that easy. And I think that we need to take into account, and I know that we won't, or at least most people won't, take into account where he came from. And like, I hold people's skill set and abilities really highly when I'm talking about these kind of things, because if he came in, I don't know, and he was like a Rory McDonald, who was already great before he really started fighting. He didn't start as a wrestler. He didn't start as a striker. He kind of started mixed martial arts as a whole as a young kid, and then worked his way up as being a well-rounded mixed martial artist and ended up doing amazing things. That's not how Alex started. He was primarily only a striker. Well, he was only a striker from the very beginning. And then as he came into the UFC, he not only did he come in, he was almost drug in by Israel Adesanya, literally drug out of a bar. Mm-hmm. Alex Pereira told me a few weeks before the fight, there was no reason for him to come to MMA. He was making really good money in Glory. Yeah, maybe he was a drunk guy in a bar, but he was making great money. He was winning more often than he wasn't. He was supporting his family. He was doing great things already. Maybe personally, he wasn't in the place that he wanted to be, but in terms of what you're supposed to do as a man and a fighter and an athlete, he was doing everything right. He was getting paid well. He was beating everybody for the most part and supporting his family. He got drug out, like his ego drug him into the UFC.
Yeah.
Like he hunted Israel Adesanya from a bar in Brazil because his feelings were hurt. That story isn't being, like, it's told a lot, but I don't know that people like can really grasp how crazy that is. Like, be like a football player saying something about me and me being like, well, I guess I'm gonna go play for the Chiefs. Like, that's insane. You know, that's crazy to even think about, but that's what he did. And then he slowly worked on his game with Glover Teixeira and essentially grappling and wrestling came from nothing. Mm-hmm. So I think what he did in terms of like the actual performances and the finishes and over the guys he did, that's really impressive. But what he did with what he had to begin with is the most impressive part for me.
Yeah. What are your expectations for 2024? I know you said he needs a good break, well-deserved.
He does.
You think we just
break and wait? Not too long, though, because he's older than I am. You don't get a whole lot of time.
So do we just wait for Ankalaev and Rakic to fight in a few weeks here? And the winner of that, you think, is the next guy, even if it's Rakic?
I wouldn't count on it, because there's a good chance that Volkan Ozdemir and Carlos Olberg could have a conversation, or at least have some sort of case to make to get that fight, especially if Ankalaev does what he tends to do sometimes, and that's kind of lay an egg and still win. Mm-hmm. And he's already been punished for that. He's already done it once before in the Jan Blachowicz fight, and Dana was absolutely furious.
Yeah.
And so Pereira just fought. What would have stopped him from fighting in Abu Dhabi and fighting Ankalaev there?
The desperation for a main event in Salt Lake City, I think, was the issue.
Yeah,
he got this fight.
Yeah, potentially, but you could have blown it out of the water in Abu Dhabi. That was an option. And I would imagine Alex would have rather waited a little longer and fought later in the month and whatever, but they're not rushing Ankalaev into a title fight for a reason. And I think if that fight lays an egg, and Volkan Ozdemir goes in there and finishes Carlos Solberg, I think Volkan Ozdemir has a great case to make for a title shot. So I wouldn't just count on that fight being, if Rakic wins, I think Rakic goes right into a title fight because Alex Pereira has already shown a little bit of interest in Rakic. I think that that style and his body type and kind of the way he fights, I think that interests him. And again, I think the same as I do. I don't think the UFC really is going to hold a Jiří Procházka loss against you too badly.
Yeah. The only other name I really see out there, Nikita Krylov fighting in New York against Azmat Mirzakhanov. He's on a 3-fight winning streak. So who knows? They want to throw something exciting in there. We know he's a finisher as well. So
for sure.
We'll see. But just a couple things before I get you out of here, Anthony. Thank you so much for the time. You have the Lionheart Lounge now, which is a show I know you've been kind of brewing in your mind for a long time. And we've got a couple episodes now. You did the one with Alex, which I thought was great. I know all the headlines where you guys squashed your beef. I don't know how much beef there actually was going into that. But I guess to see the show come to life, to have someone as significant as Alex on as a guest, just how happy are you to kind of see this creation come to reality?
Yeah, it's been really weird. Kind of like I've never had something that like was nothing. You know, like when I work the desk and they ask you to come work the desk, like that's already a thing. Like it's already big and popular and whatever, and you just try to fit in. But to like build something from the ground up is it's a little bit scary and it's a little bit I don't know. You get a little bit self-conscious because you're like, I don't know if people are going to like it. Like, is this stupid? Like the idea is just to put fighters in a different scenario because if you put them in different situations, every fighter interview looks the same. It's sitting at a desk with a microphone and it's a back and forth, you know? And because it's all the same, you get kind of the same answers. So you can do 10 interviews. Like if I watch for example, when I'm doing my research work, if I watch you interview a fighter, there's no reason for me to watch any of the other ones because you're kind of the standard of MMA journalism. Like you're going to ask all the right questions. If I'm doing research, I'll always search if you have interviewed them because I know that I'm going to get all the information. You're going to ask the right questions. You're going to ask the tough questions. If there are any, you're going to address any of the weird shit that might be going on. You're going to ask about how they feel about their opponent. Like everything that I would want to know, you're going to ask them. And no other MMA journalist is going to come up with something that you haven't. Because you're the kind, and that's not me just blowing you up here because I'm here. Like you're very, very good at what you do. So I'm trying to find a way to get them. I could just try to do the same thing you do, or I can try to put them in a different environment. And let's talk about a few different things. And then they typically open up a little bit once they realize they can trust me. I'm not the TMZ of MMA. Like I'm not, there's no gotcha moments. I'm not trying to pin you against your opponent. I really just want to have a conversation and hang out and just show these guys and girls from a different perspective, kind of through a different lens. Cause I think that not only would it, do I think people really want to see it? I think that it would really help grow a lot of these athletes' profiles a little bit and help people see them differently. Like when Alex said, you know, when I asked him about, you know, kind of a stone cold killer thing and he seems emotionless. But when I see him with his team, he's very happy. When he said he's a shy guy, it made all the sense in the world.
Yeah.
But he never said that before. He's like, yeah, I'm not super comfortable around people. And I think that that's endearing a little bit. I think a lot of people can relate to that. Even the guy that's looks like a stone cold killer in there on pay-per-view beating the absolute shit out of the best people in the world doesn't necessarily always like crowds of people. I can relate to that. And I think a lot of people at home can. So I think Bobby Green was absolutely incredible. And I owe a lot to him for kind of giving me a shot because at least I have, like when I go to other people, I didn't have anything to really go off of. Like, here's kind of my concept and my idea, but I didn't have anything to show them. Like, this is what it looks like. And here's kind of the concept. And I'm not trying to screw you over here. So Bobby and I go way back and he kind of gave me a chance and he gave me some, almost like a pilot, like gave me something to take to other people. So then my second guest was Tom Aspinall.
Yeah.
Like Tom was able to look and see and say, all right, this is cool. I'll check this out. And sometimes some guys are more willing to talk about their tattoos than others. And really the tattoo part of it is really just cause I'm interested.
Yeah.
And then we go from the tattoos and then we ask the questions that I think just flow into the conversation. It's just where I have no idea. I had no idea what I was going to ask Alex Pereira. I had no clue from the second they started the interview. Like when the camera started rolling, I had no idea where we were going to go. It's just, the tattoos are kind of an icebreaker. So we talk about them and then we just go from there.
Yeah. And I know a show like this is challenging to execute because you want to have the right guests. You want to do it in person.
It's hard. It's really hard.
And things like that. But if you got a clean slate, like any, is there for the tattoo element, is there one tattoo in MMA that you're like fascinated to know the story behind that would be like your perfect ideal guest to have?
Dude, there's a bunch.
Yeah.
There's a bunch. John Jones, his, the scripture tattoo has always fascinated me because John is a very thoughtful person. Like he doesn't do, okay, this is going to sound crazy. He doesn't do anything on accident, but he, I'm sure he's had the results have not been ideal, but like he's very calculated for the most part. And I want to know why that one. I would love to sit down and ask John why that one, what it means to him, and then blow into a conversation. I don't know that John Jones would ever sit down and have a conversation with me like that, but I would love it. I actually send a guest request from SiriusXM every single week to John Jones.
Really?
For every Wednesday for like 2 years. Like I was on Tuesday, so the day has changed here and there, but yeah. Every single show, it's a standing guest request for John Jones. Never a response. We never get any response, but it's every single week because I would love to just have a, like a sit down real world conversation with John. Mm-hmm. And just, I think it would really open up a lot of people's eyes. I don't know that John trusts me enough, but I don't think that I've given him any reason not to. I think that, Sean Brady would be a fun, really fun one. Just because he's got some of the most beautiful tattoos that I've ever seen. And they're very well done. They're very well put together. And there's got to be something behind that. You know, like he's a quiet guy, so I haven't heard him talk too much about it. But that'd be a fun one. Jamal, I would love to know which is crazy. I purposely never asked him about it. The thumbs on his chest.
Yeah.
I've never asked him about those tattoos for this exact reason. Because someday he's going to be headlining a show or he's going to be, you know, at a fight week where I'll have the opportunity to have that kind of a sit down with him. And I think, again, everyone has seen many different sides of Jamal. I would love to have a long sit down like that with him. And I think that I would be able to show you guys like the side of Jamal that I see all the time.
Yeah.
So I could go on and on and on about all the people that I, you know, like and they don't have to be good tattoos. Like, I mean, I got a bunch of bad ones. So with a lot of good stories behind them though, yeah. Like Poirier is pretty heavily tattooed. I'd love to have an opportunity to sit down and, but again, that's just the icebreaker. We might talk about tattoos for 10 minutes and then go on for 30 and talk about just life and wherever that leads us, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Anthony, last thing, you are fighting pretty much 2 months from today.
Yeah.
10, Dominic Reyes, this one's been brewing for a long time. Just how are things going? I'm sure like camp is probably just starting to ramp up and get intense. And this is a fight that you want for a while, right?
Yeah. I've always liked the Dominic Reyes fight. And I don't really, for no other reason, just because he's one of the best guys in the world. And he's one of those guys that I think a lot of people thought beat John Jones. He's a name. It's interesting to me, which is kind of where I'm at in my career right now. I just want to have some fun, dude. I want to train really hard. I want to enjoy whatever I have left in my career. And I want fights with guys that I think matter. And Dominic Reyes matters to me. That's a win that, like, there's something you look back at, like, as fun as the Petrino fight was, I won't look back on that one. And like, if I'm sitting around a campfire with a cold beer in my hand, I'm not going to sit around and tell my friends and reminisce and tell my kids about the time I beat Petrino. Like, that's not the one that's going to stand out, you know? I don't know. Alexander Gustafsson matters, you know? Shogun mattered, Rashad Evans mattered, and Dominic Reyes matters, and so that one is gonna mean a lot to me. So yeah, camps are ramping up. The more I dig into it, the more dangerous I find that Dominic Reyes is, which is really fun for me. I'm really excited. I don't really give a shit about wins and losses and all that stuff right now. I just want to be the best version of myself that I can be, and have as much fun preparing for this as I possibly can.
Yeah, well, we'll have much more time to talk about that. You'll reminisce about the fights with your children around the campfire, but you were here reminiscing today at the bonfire.
Hell yeah.
There you go. So Anthony, appreciate you so much. I think we went over a lot today. So thank you for being here, and hopefully we'll see you back here many times as I try to get this podcast going, and hopefully it has a long, long tenure ahead.
Yeah, let's do it again soon.
Next up here on the Bonfire, the first ever media appearance, but it's also a Fight Week fighter appearance, Oscar. Man, making history in multiple ways here. I guess, what does it feel like to be on your own Fight Week when we're always talking about everyone else's Fight Week?
It's actually quite funny because I'm trying to do both. So I will be working as media for this event too. So for the pre-fight press conference, which I won't be featured on, I will be in the crowd recording it and asking questions, which kind of makes it kind of fun. So basically what I'm trying to tell you, Mike, is I'm overworked and stressed. But other than that, it's going to be great.
Yeah, I mean, I mentioned off the top in the intro, obviously you're fighting in BKFC on Saturday against Ben the Bane Davis, another media slash personality, whatever you want to describe him as. You fought before, obviously. You did the Train Alta program and you did the amateur fight and everything. Why did you want to do this again? I know we had many talks. You're like, I don't know if I'm good. I had the experience. You got a lot of like praise and feedback from people. Why did you want to do this?
Well, like as Mike and I have spoken many occasion and many a bar, like I needed something to get myself a bit disciplined and have something to aim for. Mm-hmm. And then if we're going to be candid about it, like the opportunities in this sport to sort of stand out as a media member are decreasing constantly. So I thought, well, I got a bit of clout when I did the fight. Maybe I should just do another one of them. And then I started training MMA again. I just really couldn't be bothered to do it. I could just tell, like, if I had an MMA fight, I would just goof off during camp and stuff. Mm-hmm. Then Connor got connected with BKFC. And I thought, right, well, an event that Connor's directly connected to that I can get in on, like, what an opportunity that is for me to sort of showcase myself to the wider public. So that sort of made sense. And then on a competitive side, the fear of doing bare knuckle made me think like, okay, I actually will train properly and train seriously. So I got both of the things I was looking for in one package. So that's why I did it.
How did you train? I guess is the big question for this, right? Like the Train Alta thing, you're going through a thing where it's like a guided program. You have other people who are going through the same experience and all that kind of stuff, similar level of, you know, time, training and things like that. But this is like much more real. I'm assuming you did like a more formal kind of preparation. What did you even do for this?
You would think that. I trained at the extreme. I sparred a lot more, as you can tell by this lovely black eye I'm currently sporting. I just sparred a lot more. So it's one thing that I've been really struggling with is I can't really remember the first camp that I did. Maybe because it was so boring and monotonous, I can't really remember. I know that I was traveling a lot for it, so maybe I just didn't really do a camp. So I'm trying to compare, well, am I fitter now than I was then? I can't really tell, which is kind of a bit unnerving, I guess. But I definitely sparred more. I sparred like 75 rounds for this. And they were like good against good people and not against like Train Alta people who, with all due respect, kind of suck. So it's like, and it's all been boxing and it's been a bit harder and stuff. So I would say in terms of a formal camp, like, no, I haven't been going right. Oh, 11 o'clock strength and conditioning, but two a days and spar a lot. That's basically how I treated this.
Yeah. Do you spar with gloves every single time, or could you do anything to actually like try to harden the knuckles and get ready? Or do you just preserve them for the one time?
Well, some people gave me like things on what you're meant to do, but I kind of thought, how much preservation can you really create in 6 weeks? So I didn't really do much. I sparred obviously always in gloves, occasionally in MMA gloves. And then I did hit the bag bare knuckle, but then it just like shredded my hands to pieces. So I thought, I would rather just implement the tactic of don't think about it and it'll be fine.
Fair enough. What does this fight week like look like? What do they have you doing from the fighting side? I know you said you're going to do some media things, but like it's for BKFC, it's a big card. They have three title fights and like a lot of stuff that I imagine is going to eat up a lot of the oxygen. So you, I'm sure, maybe don't get a ton of stuff thrown at you, but what did they actually have you doing?
So we check in on Thursday. You have to do your portrait stuff. And I'll be honest with you, Mike, I'll tell this to you as a friend. I've obviously thought about the fight a lot. I've thought about wearing tanning lotion for the photos as much because I'm so pale and I want the photos to look cool. I'm like, well, if you put browning lotion off, I can wash it off before the fight so I didn't sweat off. I still haven't decided. That could be a last minute call. But yeah, so you got photos, stuff like that. I don't think Ben and I, the way it feels to me is bare knuckle have basically got like a freebie, right? They got me and Ben promoting this and getting an audience that maybe they didn't have, but they don't really want to they have three champions on the card. So if they push us, they're going to sort of devalue their own champion. So yeah. I think we're going to get thrown out there for the first fight. Sort of do what you got to do, guys, and then get the F out. So I don't think we have much pre-fight media stuff unless he and I do stuff together, which is like he suggested we do. I'm sort of still up in the air because my schedule is a bit mental. And it's like at this point, I don't know if I really want to be around the guy I'm about to fight like for that long. So I'm kind of in two minds about it. But yeah, so there's nothing that they're making us do anyway.
Yeah. Well, if it's not till Thursday, what's the weather like? Can you go get some like beach rays, maybe try to bronze yourself little bit?
I consider doing that, but then imagine if I got really sunburned.
That would be
so concerning. Yeah. It's actually really interesting you ask, right? So it's set to rain on the day we fight. The fight is outside. The rain looks like it will be over by the time I fight, but the humidity is 86%. Currently it's 40 and it's nice, but 86 is a lot. And it was interesting. I got here and right around the time I would be, so I think I'm going to fight 7:15 PM local. Mm-hmm. At 7 PM here today, it was really hot. At 7:30, it was really cold. So it's going to be a really interesting thing that I don't know if I can really prepare for. So the weather is very nice, very muggy, as we would say. But it's not 86% yet, and that'll be even worse.
Yeah, that's that's another X factor you're going to have to deal with. That's crazy. Yeah. Yeah, you were saying off camera, like you went from Salt Lake straight to there. Right? You're covering UFC 307, which we'll talk a little bit about before I get you out of here on the back end. Yeah. But you flew straight from there to Marlboro, I believe it's called.
Marbella.
Okay.
I forgot too.
It's called BKFC Spain. So I was that makes it much better when they renamed it that. How was that trek over?
Yeah. So I flew from Salt Lake to Amsterdam. Didn't get to stop there. Probably fortunately. But I didn't get much sleep. And I'm repeating myself here, so you can set it for. But I'm a bit of an overthinker anyway. Mm-hmm. And so I was sitting there. And I was like, you know, is the fight going to go well? And it's just like the range of emotions you can experience. So I started really visualizing the walkout. Then I was all excited in my seat. And I started like doing head movement next to the guy next to me. And I think he thought I was a bit of a crackhead. And then I was like, well, what if something bad happens? I should probably like write a will. And I got my laptop out. I think the guy next to me watched me write, this is my last will and testament. Give it all to, I don't know, split it up. And then I just deleted it because I thought, who wants this in their head? And then, I went through every possible. I woke up with a little bit of a sore throat, convinced I was sick. Oh my God, the fight's in jeopardy. Like my eye was a bit twitchy. Oh my God, the medicals won't pass me. So at this stage, it's like, I just want to get there. I just want to get it done at this point. So the journey here was mentally torturous.
So obviously I think nerves for anyone who's gonna do any sort of fight are real. Do you think you're kind of already pushing those out of the way though after that whole flight? You kind of got to run through the whole course, it almost sounds like.
I think it'll be like back and forth, right? I think it'll probably, I don't know, because I remember the last one I wasn't nervous in waiting to go out. I was just ready. I was like, and I think I hope to feel like that again, and just like get the relief of like just getting it over and done with, but I don't know. But I'm pretty good at like finding the humor in it. So at least when I'm being crazy, I'm like, oh, I'm being crazy. Everyone keeps saying like, oh, enjoy the week. What's there to enjoy? So I'm like terrified it's going to go terrible. So, but yeah, I mean, for the most part, it's okay. But yeah.
How much weight do you have to cut?
I'm 168 now. I have to get to 155, but it falls off me. Like I go to bed at 170, I wake up 163. And I feel like I look very skinny in the face. I feel like I look very gaunt. I don't actually like it. So.
No, it looks good. When does Dan Hooker, your cornerman, arrive?
Dan gets in Wednesday at 4:30 PM. I shall have a bottle of red wine waiting for him. So, because I feel like it's a long way that he's had to go. He needs some sort of treat.
Yeah.
And then I think Craig Jones is meant to get in Wednesday, but he's a little bit harder to pin down.
We'll see. Yeah. Corner as well, or just Dan?
Yeah, Craig's in the corner.
Okay. What advice that's helpful can Craig Jones give in a bare knuckle boxing fight?
Well, obviously we're on your new podcast, Mike, so I don't want to like get you demonetized right away. But Craig just keeps telling me what he would like to do in between rounds and what he would like, So I keep saying we can't do that. We'll be live on TV, but he wants to put his new sunglasses to good use. I think Craig's probably there just for, it's funny that Craig's in the corner. It's basically how I feel.
Yeah,
he should shut up. I don't want to hear anything from him, but it's funny that he's there.
Yeah. And for anyone who doesn't know, can you just lay out like the rules and everything you guys have agreed to here?
I don't really know the rules. It's like, as far as I'm aware, it's a boxing match with no gloves on. Three 2-minute rounds. And if you clinch, you're allowed to maintain the clinch as long as you're still punching. But that's very tiring, so I won't look to do that. And I think that's about it. I think if you get knocked down, it's a 10-8 round. And then I believe if it's a tie after three, there's a sudden death round. But they did say that they would look at how Ben and I were doing before they proceeded with that.
Well, everyone will know after one round.
Yeah. If they'll probably know, yeah. So.
Yeah. Bold enough to make a prediction of any kind, or what are we thinking?
I don't know. I'm in a bit of a weird spot, right? Because everyone I know thinks that, like, Ben's a bit, you know, I could get through Ben pretty easy seems to be the vibe most people are giving me. But then that's like, well, if I don't, then I look, if everyone thinks he's a pussy and then I don't beat him up, then I look like a pussy too. So there's a lot of pressure. But I don't know if I'll go as far as prediction, because I think I hit hard, but then I've never hit, like, I haven't hit someone without gloves recently. So I don't know how that's going to feel in that sort of environment. So I don't want to know if I hit him and then he doesn't get knocked out and I broke my hand, I won't be able to knock him out. So I'll just say I'll beat him. We'll figure it out how.
There you go. Well, there's only a few paths to victory in a bare knuckle fight. So I think
one or this one.
Yeah, exactly. Well, before I let you go, you obviously were at UFC 307. Interesting event, I think, kind of coming out of there. The two biggest narratives are Alex Pereira, of course, how magnificent he is, and just, I don't know, like the weirdness of judging and refereeing and stuff right now, like our wall installers taking over the sport. And like, I don't know, of course there were some weird decisions on that card, but like when I say think back to Saturday, what comes to mind first for you from being there in Salt Lake?
Yeah, like I think MMA, more than probably any other sport I know of, has cycles of not what's fashionable, but cycles of what's sort of working. You know, there's the wrestler, then suddenly Israel comes along, and then it's the kickboxer who can stuff the wrestling. And now it seems like we're getting back into the stage of the guy, basically all the way back to Lay and Pray. I mean, it's not quite that bad, but it's not far off a couple of these guys. Mm-hmm. Couple champions. But and I think that what frustrates me a little bit about it is, I think everyone, with the exception of maybe Eastern Europe, everyone agrees it's not that great for the sport if like you just get guys who just hold you down and don't do a lot with it. Dana White agrees with it. But we all agree that it's shit and then nothing happens to change it. Like, where obviously I asked Dana about it. Mm-hmm. He and I agreed, like, oh, the referees need to be more active, but they're not. So how do we make them be more active? If we all agree what needs to change, then I would like to see us start actually moving to changes. Because I thought on Saturday that Aldo should have won the fight. I was amazed they gave it to Juliana. Since then, I've seen other people argue for it. But at the time, I couldn't believe that either. And I just think, Mike, you and I have spoken off camera about this, and I've bemoaned to you the potential lack of stars we might hit in the near future. Yeah. If you're going to have guy, yes, it's a sport. Yes, you need to base it on skills and stuff like that. But it is also a massively entertainment-driven sport. I would like to see something like a McGregor clock where you can't stall every day again and again. But yeah, I think it's like, that was my biggest takeaway, was that you're rewarding the behavior that none of us want.
What was interesting too, because we had that referee in the Cesar Almeida Ihor Poteria fight who like everyone freaked out about, and he was doing all the things where if you wanted to be like super liberal with it and be like, you got to do something right away or you're getting repositioned or stood up, like that was the extreme on one end. And then we almost saw the extreme on the other end. Like there's got to be a middle ground somewhere in there between the Aldo fight and the Cesar Almeida fight.
I think for me, what would be, I don't mind if you re-engage in grappling, but if you re-engage in, like, so the one is like round three, he goes for a double leg, he doesn't get it, disengages, immediately goes again. He's not like trying to advance, he's just holding on. I think if you re-enter the same position with clearly the same intent, that's where I'd like to see them do more separation. But like you said, if we really went all liberal with it, then in 6 months we'd be like, well, it's not fair on the wrestlers, you know? So it's a tricky sport. It's not like an easy fix, but I wanted Jose Aldo to win, so I was very upset.
Yeah.
I think this is honestly where the sport is headed and what the UFC wants. I mean, it's why they put Khalil Roundtree in this title fight. You heard Dana at the press conference. He's like, oh, like did his little impression. Everyone said it was number eight and like making a play, but it was a banger fight. Well, it's what you wanted from the entertainment side, but like Alex Pereira was the big favorite for a reason. And Khalil Roundtree's face looked the way it did for a reason after the fight, because it wasn't the primary fight you should have made, but it was the one that you think would make a good fight.
Did they spike Ankalaev before the Rakic fight and try and like get that? Like how, because, you know, like obviously, yeah, I will say, like Merab obviously is probably not, probably not who they would like have wanted that one to win. And then, you know, everyone's got questions about Bilal, but Bilal Shavkat's coming up, so I understand what they're trying to do there. But, you know, it seems like there's a guy in each division who's almost at the title that could be considered one of these lay and pray guys. And I just sort of think, unless you're going to do the Makhachev thing and just kick him out, I don't really know how you avoid it. You know, you can only make fights at weird rankings for so long before it becomes too obvious, like they did with Bilal, really, right? They tried to avoid that fight, and then eventually it became like, okay, you have to let him do it at this point, you know? So yeah. I kind of wonder how they're going to fix it.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's been a problem, or like, I don't want to call it a problem, but just a thing. Like John Fitch in 2008, when he fought GSP, they tried to do everything they possibly could to not give him that title shot, but eventually he was undeniable. But like, this is what the UFC wants. They want sprawling brawlers, basically. And I know, like, without dropping any names, key coaches out there who are in charge of some of the biggest gyms in the world, they're like, we don't even teach submissions from bottom or things like that anymore. Our training is basically striking and get-ups.
And by the way, for what it's worth, and I'm going to sound like a shill here, I prefer it too. I hope the sport goes that way. Like, I don't like, yeah. After like Merab won, everyone's like, well, it's MMA. It's like, yeah. But obviously, what we watched on Saturday was better, was it not? That was way more fun. Let's do more of that, you know?
Yeah, no, it's definitely the onus of the refs, though, to make sure the fight flows, and on the judges to not reward that stuff. I mean, Mario Bautista, he is a good fighter and everything, but like you go 0-10 on
takedowns. Round one, he looks great.
Yeah,
I don't know why they booked Aldo at Salt Lake again, though. This is like another thing. It's like, why? I get that.
We could go on about UFC 307 all day, but it is your fight week, Oscar, so the focus is on you, and I appreciate you. Yeah, there you go.
Who's the main event of the UFC this week?
Tatsuo Taira versus Brandon Royval. We know what we're tuning in for.
People's main event, bro.
Yeah. Well, Oscar, I appreciate you coming on here. I think you're going to be a friend of the program for many years ahead if we make it that far. So I'm proud of you.
Congrats on getting the new show, Mike.
Thank you, man.
Good for you for taking more work on.
Yeah, just what I needed. But hopefully things pan out well, and appreciate you being here, man. I'm very proud of you for what you're doing here, and I'll be even prouder once I see you next week with your hand raised in Riyadh, and we'll do a debrief.
Oh, God, I forgot about Riyadh. Yeah, cool.
All right, sounds good, Oscar. Have a good time over there, and we'll talk soon, man. Big thanks to Anthony and Oscar for joining this edition of The Bonfire. I know I didn't mention on the debut episode of the show last week what the schedule for this program is going to look like exactly, and that's because I'm not entirely sure, to be honest. I like Tuesdays. I think that's kind of a good time, the aftermath of events and stuff like that, but I do travel quite a bit for MMA Junkie, and sometimes that kind of takes me out of the mix for Tuesdays, Mondays, depending where I'm going. Like coming up next week, I will be headed to Saudi Arabia Monday night to cover the PFL pay-per-view with Francis Ngannou and Henan Ferreira, and then making a turn straight from there to go to Abu Dhabi for UFC 308 for the monster of a fight that is Ilya Topuria and Max Holloway. So I think, you know, when I'm traveling, it might be a different day of the week because I'll probably want to get some content on the ground to show for the show, which I think is going to be kind of a big piece of what I want to do here, is sharing stories for you guys and talking to people while on the ground at some of these big events we go to. So I can't make a promise of exactly when next week's episode is going to drop, but I can promise it will be something good. So please make sure to like, comment, share, subscribe, all those things on whatever platform you're listening to. I think we managed to get the show on all of them, all the main ones that people go through. So any support is a huge help for the algorithm and all that stuff. I'm sure you guys understand if you listen to a podcast or anything on a regular basis. So any support is hugely appreciated. Thanks to everyone out there for tuning in, and I'll see you guys here next week from Riyadh.